Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 16th day of January. What the hell month is it? I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. It's the year 2020, by the way. So let's just end that confusion. I at least have that down. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, press and play, downloading, doing all that good stuff. Your word of mouth is how we grow. So thank you for that. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. And if you got any questions, comments, or whatever, concerns, whatever you got to say. Programming note. I'm going out on a limb here. But I've gotten so many emails about getting this guest on the show that I thought I should give you guys a chance to ask questions. So I am scheduled later this afternoon. So you've got until about 3 o'clock to get your questions in for Brandon Straka, the guy who started the walk away movement for liberals. I'll be sitting down with him this evening for tomorrow's program. So if you have any questions for him or comments or whatever, you can email them to me by 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at Derek@dailycaller.com, and I will do my best to get them up there and get them asked. I'll ask him them, since that's who the questions would be of. So yeah, you've got until then. So make sure you make that happen. It'll be an interesting chat, and I thought you guys should be able to contribute to it. So now you have your chance. It really is amazing how many emails I've gotten going, you should have this guy on. You need to talk to this guy. I heard this guy talk to somebody else, and you got to do this, you got to do that. And it just so happened that he is going to be in D.C., and we're able to have a conversation. So there you go. Here's your chance to get your questions asked. Or I'll just, maybe I won't read them, maybe I'll just work them into the conversation. I don't know. It all goes by the seat of my pants. So that's just how the world works. Any other housekeeping business that I can think of? Not really off the top of my head. For those of you who keep emailing me what podcasts I listen to, I don't listen to any podcasts anymore, to be honest with you. I occasionally, I suppose I listen to Adam Carolla still, but not as often as I used to because I've gotten into books on tape, and I've been listening to biographies. Every time I'm out driving or if I'm going to the grocery store or whatever, I pop in the ear pods unless I bring a kid with me. And I'm listening to The Kid about Ted Williams. I've been on a baseball kick lately. I listened to The Kid about Ted Williams. I did a book on The Last Boy or something like that about Mickey Mantle. That was excellent. I did one on Babe Ruth. I did A Terrible Beauty about Ty Cobb. That is incredible. The story, the actual journalism done on Ty Cobb. Oh, no, he wasn't a flaming racist. It's amazing how a lie can get into the consciousness of the public and stay there until somebody goes, I'm just going to look at this, and then the whole house of cards falls down. I highly recommend A Terrible Beauty about Ty Cobb. My next one, I did one on Benjamin Franklin. My next one is going to be on, after I finish the Ted Williams one, which is like 35 hours long, so it's going to be a while. I have one on Thomas Edison. That's like another monstrously long one. So it's historical figures and baseball stars, you know, of the olden 50s and earlier that I'm really into. So I don't really listen to any podcasts. I find, I don't know, it sounds douchey, I suppose, but I find them redundant. I find people just spouting off without having any, most of these people I know, and I don't need to know their opinions. So I just don't listen to any of them, except for Carolla if I want to laugh occasionally. But I don't get much of a chance for that anymore, either. So there's my podcast library is, I guess I have some How Did This Get Made about movies, but I don't get a chance to listen to those either. So thanks for asking, and I'm sure I disappointed you in my answer, but sorry. I've got enough opinions of my own that I don't need to hear somebody else's rants. All right, let's get into the show, shall we? And don't forget, 3 p.m. tomorrow, you got to get those emails in if you want to ask an answer of the guy who started the walk-away movement from Democrats. So, 3 p.m. Eastern time. First, a quick word from our sponsor before we get into the news of the day, Life Change Tea. Yes, getthetea.com. That is the website you go to. It'll change your life. You'll get more energy. You're not getting all the nutrition from the food that you're eating. And there's a very specific reason why. And that is because you've got things laying around in your digestive tract stopping you from being able to do that. Getthetea.com. Has Life Change Tea that will change your life because it cleans you out and allows your body to absorb all the nutrients in the food that you eat. You're missing it. You're dragging. You find yourself near the middle of the day, the end of the day, kind of dragging. You go, man, I wish I had more energy all day long. Get the tea at lifechangetea.com. Drink some tea, one cup a day. Don't overdo it. Don't press your luck. Trust me, because you'll be on the toilet all day. But it's a tea that makes you go. It cleans you out, keeps you regular, helps you bring energy back to your life. It brings energy back to your life. I drink it every day. I have some in the fridge right now. I brew up a gallon of it at a time, drink a cup a day, and boom, I'm ready to go. I barely get any sleep at all, and I'm still going like the Energizer Bunny. I chase kids around. I can lap my kids, of course. One of them's just starting to walk, so that's a pretty easy race to win. And the other one's two, so she's not very... Never mind the speed of my children. It gives me much more energy than I used to have, and I appreciate it, and I like the taste as well. And you enter promo code Derek at checkout, hit the apply button, and boom, special deal just for you guys. GetTheTea.com. Check out all the great products they have there, all the great supplements, everything you need, and a great discount for listeners to this program. Enter promo code Derek, and boom, you're taken care of. Okay, I appreciate them. I appreciate you guys patronizing them. Appreciate everything that goes on with this program. Let's talk about what happened yesterday because the Democrats decided to make it official. They put a ring on it. They finally sent the articles of impeachment over to the United States Senate, and there is going to be a trial starting on Tuesday of next week, which has a lot of implications for the Democrats running for president. I think that the timing of this thing can be traced directly to Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic Party establishment's love and embrace of crazy, sniffy Uncle Joe Biden. There's never been a front runner who's needed more help limping across the finish line in the history of partisan politics that I can remember. He might as well be a reanimated corpse or a Weekend at Bernie's thing. His campaign is so lackluster that the entirety of the United States House of Representatives has to come together to help him in the final days before Iowa. So remember, Joe Biden's run for president twice before, 2008 and 1988. In 1988, he didn't even actually make it to 1988. He dropped out near the end of 1987 because he got caught plagiarizing Neil Kinnock's biography as his own, which is pathetic. Pathetic. It's your own life, dude. You can't draw inspiration and stories and anecdotes from your own life without using the words of others. What in the hell is wrong with you? Well, a lot is wrong with Joe, as it turns out. But this time he's going for the gold. Oh, by the way, in the the second run for president in 2008, all of his foreign policy experience and the wisdom that he has amassed over a lifetime of public service, as they love to say, got him 1% in Iowa. So at least on the positive side, if you're a Joe Biden fan, there's really nowhere to go but up. Like, honestly, there's nowhere to go but up come the caucus on the 4th of February. So he's got that going for him. Whether or not he can win is something else entirely different, and that remains to be seen. He is facing stiff competition from all of his fellow Democrats, And now some of those Democrats, perhaps his toughest opponents, will be dragged off of the campaign trail thanks to Nancy Pelosi. See, remember back a month ago, and it's been a month since the House passed the Articles of Impeachment and then just kind of hid them and went on vacation. It's so important. We must move quickly. We can't wait. We couldn't possibly go to court. All right, but we can go on vacation. We can take a couple of weeks off. The threat to our republic that requires that we act now without talking to witnesses or anything like that is so great. We must act now, and then we can go and chill on the beach for a while. It's no big deal. What's the rush? Well, they waited a month. They got no concessions from the Senate on their desired venue circumstances for the trial over there. So what has changed? Well, Democrats started to get restless. Nancy was able to get them back in line by cracking the whip on them. But more importantly, they've reached the point that any trial will impact the caucuses and the ability of the sitting senators running for president to be able to campaign. See, the trial is going to run 6 days a week, I believe, every day but Sunday. Senators are required to be there. They are required to sit there silently. They can't. See, there are rules about in the Senate. I once got in trouble because I pulled my phone out on the floor. I once got in trouble because I sat in a chair with arms as well, which my boss, Senator Burns, was sitting down at his desk waiting for his turn to give a speech. And I went down there because I had rewritten the speech. It's a crucial point. I thought of a better way to put it. So I printed up the new version. I went down to the floor of the Senate. And the floor of the Senate is usually empty because there's like two or three members milling around waiting for their turn to talk, but they don't really give a damn what happens on the floor of the Senate. That's all for the C-SPAN cameras. So I go down to talk to Senator Burns to show him the changes. I wanted to point him out explicitly because he wasn't familiar with them. And I just grabbed the chair next to him, happened to have arms on it. And you think, what does it matter? Pull it out, sat down, showed him what I was doing. He kind of had this sort of crap-eating grin on his face, laughed, looked at it, said, okay, oh yeah, that's better. Thank you for pointing that out. Okay, thanks. And so I get up, I push the chair back in, I leave, and I could see the ushers or whatever the hell they were. They weren't pages, but they were kind of security guys getting antsy over in the side. They didn't come out onto the floor, but they were like dancing around waiting for me to come out. And I'm like, what the hell did I do? And they grab me, and they didn't grab me. They, once we get off the floor, they go, you are not allowed to sit in a chair with arms on the floor of the Senate. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they said, the chairs with arms are for members only. If you need to sit down, you ask us, and we will bring out a chair without arms that you can sit in. It's like, okay, like whatever. I still didn't see what the big deal was. But apparently, the chairs with arms are members only. You're not allowed to sit in another member's chair. If you're not a member, you're not allowed to sit in any of their chairs. It doesn't matter. There was a desk, and there probably still is, in the back corner. I forget which member it is, but whatever member, they're assigned by seniority. Whoever gets that desk has to fill it with candy, has to keep it maintained with candy. We could dig into the candy desk, but we couldn't sit in a chair with arms. So, yeah, I sat in a chair with arms. I guess just me and senators have ever sat in a chair with arms in the United States Senate. The horror, the horror. But you're also not allowed to pull out your phone on the floor of the Senate if you're not a member, at least. If you are caught, you can carry it in your hand as you walk through the chamber to the cloakroom. But if you stop, if you sit on the, they have benches along the wall. You can sit in those all day if you want to observe. On the floor. But if you pull out your phone on the floor and start sending an email or read a text message or whatever, they'll take your phone. That will, you lose it. It's gone. It's Senate provided, so they're really only hurting themselves. But members can. So it'll be interesting to see if any members are out there tweeting. They could theoretically live, they're not supposed to, but they could live tweet the impeachment trial. They're not allowed to talk, ask questions verbally. Any questions they have will have to be submitted in writing, but they are They'll probably be, I bet somebody will be playing some games. I bet some people will be checking their email. And I guarantee you that somebody out there will be live tweeting or tweeting occasionally. Why? Because Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders, and to a lesser degree, Michael Bennett, but he might as well drop out of the race, are all running for president of the United States. And they are not going to be able to campaign except via Skype or some other video conference thing or surrogate over at least the next 2 weeks, which will take us right up to, if not past, the Iowa caucuses. So that leaves the field kind of clear for Tom Steyer, but Tom Steyer is not going anywhere. Let's just be honest about that. His billions are a hindrance to him. He's too rich. He's too white. Democrats don't like him. And Pete Buttigieg, who he's not exactly a charismatic campaigner, but he does get people excited. They're looking for some kind of minority to vote for, and there's a gay guy. He counts-ish, unless it's, I mean, there are no people of color except for Deval Patrick left, and he's not going to stand a chance. And Andrew Yang, and Democrats don't consider Asians to be oppressed minorities. So the closest thing the Democrats have to a victim are some of the women or Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg is going to be the only one out there on the campaign trail. So they're going to be kind of looking at him. But most importantly to Joe Biden, it's going to be him and Buttigieg out there are the ones who are going to be drawing crowds, who are going to be making a difference. This is Joe Biden's chance to shine. Unfortunately for Joe Biden, every chance he's ever had to shine, he just doesn't have it in him. Joe Biden's biggest problem is that people pay too close attention to what he says. People take him literally. People listen to what he says and say, that doesn't make any sense. That's his biggest problem. So now that he has the stage to himself, even more eyeballs are going to be on him. The pressure will be ramped up. Maybe he can rise to the occasion. He's never done it before, but maybe he can rise to the occasion, pull it together, and get the win in Iowa for the first time. Maybe. We'll see. It'll certainly be better than the 1% he pulled last time. But that, I think, is why Nancy Pelosi has withheld the articles of impeachment to this point. There's no other reason, and nothing was gained from her 1 month delay. They didn't even really try to make a hard sell on anything. They didn't try to pitch the American people. They just kind of looked like, okay, we did that. We're the dog that caught the car. What do we do? What do we do at this point? We've impeached him. We have no case. We have no chance. We have nothing going forward. What do we do with this? And a month later, they said, well, we've got to do this sooner or later. We got to do our business or get off the pot. So, all right, here are the articles of impeachment. Not really the best strategy in the world, but then Democrats are not really the best strategists in the world. So what are you going to do? But in the announcement of the impeachment managers, yes, I haven't seen it yet. It's probably out there, though. They haven't given the official, nobody said the, it's a impeachment management team that looks like America. But it probably, somebody out there is thinking it if they haven't tweeted it already. Look at the diversity of the impeachment managers in a desperate attempt to try and distract from the lack of diversity on the debate stage for Democrats. They're all about diversity except for when the chips are down, and then they're not about diversity at all. Celebrate diversity. But we're going to stick with the white guys. We're going to the white ladies, too. That's what we're going to do. But during the impeachment press conference, when they were announcing the impeachment managers, Nancy Pelosi could not string together a coherent sentence. The woman has some kind of problem. She had notes. She had the names and biographies of all of the impeachment managers, all seven of them. She listed things like she was the first female police chief in that city. Who cares? I don't understand. How does that qualify her to be an impeachment manager? Is that what you're trying to say? This one served in the military. They're trying to draw the distinction. Look, we're the party that has a wide distribution of people, a very, very diverse crowd. meaning except for the fact that more than half of the impeachment managers are either from California or New York. The ones who will actually be doing the talking are from California and New York. Adam Schiff, Jerry Nadler, Zoe Lofgren, Hakeem Jeffries. Those four people you're going to see all the time. And then they threw in somebody from Florida, somebody from Texas, and somebody from Colorado because they needed a Hispanic. They wanted another black. They wanted a black woman up there. So they said, we'll take this one and this one and this one. And there you go. There's our diversity. Celebrate us for this. But listen to this sentence from Nancy Pelosi. See if you can try and decipher, and decipher is the right word, what in the hell she's talking about. I could have picked any 1 minute segment from her speech. She wasn't reading it per se, but she had copious notes and still seemed incapable of formulating a coherent thought. Now, I've done this. We're 20 minutes into the program. I don't have anything written. I don't have anything prepared. Maybe that's obvious. I don't know. But I have been able to string together coherent sentence after coherent sentence without hemming and hawing in the middle of it. Nancy Pelosi, who does this for a living, who is a public speaker. She was elected in theory because of her ability to campaign, one would think, one would hope, which does entail, theoretically, an ability to communicate with other human beings and convince them over to your side. Yet she cannot do something as basic as this. And it's not just the stumbling and the hemming and the hawing. It is the mispronunciation of basic words. Perhaps I'm overselling this. Let's just listen to Nancy Pelosi try and gargle marbles and mucus and God knows what else, a retainer, some loose dentures, gum, cud. I don't know what's going on in that mouth. I don't want to know what's going on in that mouth, but there's definitely something going on in that mouth. Listen to this.
This is about the Constitution of the United States, and it's important for the president to know and Putin to know, the American voters in America should decide who our president is, not Vladimir Putin in Russia. So today I'm very proud to present the managers who will bring the case, which we have great confidence in terms of impeaching the president and his removal. But this further evidence insist that, and we wouldn't be in this situation had we not waited, insist that there be witnesses and that we see documentation. And now you see some of that change happening on the Senate side. I hope it does for the good of our country and to honor our Constitution. So today on the floor, we'll pass a resolution naming the managers, as I mentioned, appropriating the funds for the trial and transmitting the articles of impeachment of the President of the United States for trying to influence a foreign government for his own personal and political benefit.
What the hell is she talking about? Anybody have any idea? We got the Constitution. We got this. We got that. Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin? Is that like the latest Disney bad guy? Vladimir Putin? I get you could mispronounce one of the two. Did some staffer write it down wrong? Did her programmers mess up the code? What in the hell is going on with this woman? And again, she is... Now, remember that the president and the articles of impeachment have nothing to do whatsoever with Russia. They have nothing whatsoever to do with the so-called Russian collusion. Nothing. Nothing at all. Robert Mueller's report was a dud. They've moved on from that. But here is Nancy Pelosi, apparently to adapt, unable to accept reality, and unable to recognize that is no longer operative talking points. But here she is, Putin this and Putin that, and Vladimir Putin. Okay, you can mispronounce one of them, I suppose. But then to take the L from Vladimir and put it in Putin, that's a new level of crazy. I don't know what medicine she's on. I think, actually, if you saw the press conference, she looks in a perpetual state of surprise. Her eyebrows are trying to race to the... It's like they're trying to be Sir Edmund Hillary, and only one of them can be. And they're both racing for the top of her head. She looks like a perpetual state of surprise. She looks as if you just took a picture of her. Her inner monologue would be, what? That's what she, that's just, to my mind, it's a Botox overdose. And we see this all, far too many politicians are so vain, and they go, oh, I must look good. I'll go get some Botox. You don't ever get Botox like the day before you appear anywhere. You need a couple of days, apparently, or I don't know, maybe you don't need it at all, but they always seem to get it and be ripe from this. They have this forehead that doesn't move whatsoever, and their eyes are in a perpetual state of horror and shock. And they think, if they think that looks good, what do they look like without it? I'm afraid to even wonder about that. They look like that cartoon dog Droopy, where everything is just sort of flushed forward and you can't even see the eyeballs underneath the ripples of flesh. Because that's the only thing I can imagine. I don't know who goes, this is the look I'm going for. But what I want to do is just like I French kissed a light socket. When it's on, can we get that look? Oh, you've got that? All right, let's do that. So from there, she had all the managers behind her lined up, all excited and raring to go, all playing their part, standing there looking diverse. That was what they were there for. Jerry Nadler then waddles up to the stage. I don't think we're going to hear a whole lot from Jerry during the trial. Jerry is not the best walker in the world. He's older. He's overweight. He's got knee problems. He used to be like gigantically obese. So years of that have taken the toll on the knees, and he's got other health problems. So he's, you know, to give a speech, you can't just sit there on the floor during a trial and like in your recliner in your swivel chair, twirl around and Han Solo, give me the carbonite, Han Solo. You can't do that on the floor of the Senate. So I suspect we're mostly going to hear from Adam Schiff, but Jerry Nadler did make his way up to the podium at the press conference, and he tried to make the case about why they couldn't wait, which again shows either a lack of self-awareness or a lack or just a general state of cockiness in the Democratic Party, knowing full well that none of the reporters in the room were going to challenge their garbage claim. None of the reporters in the room would raise their hand and go, wait a second, you're making the case, Mr. Chairman, that this is so important and it's such a threat to our democracy that you had to act quickly, and you're only doing this after a month, 2 weeks of which you went on vacation. You could have handled this, you know, within 20 minutes after passing the articles of impeachment. You did none of that. Now you're telling us it's urgent again after taking a month off. No. That wasn't asked of Jerry Nadler. That would be too much like journalism. Let's listen to Jabba make a contradictory case.
Let me add to that. There is an overwhelming case, beyond any reasonable doubt, that the president betrayed the country by withholding federal funds appropriated by Congress, breaking the law in doing so, in order to extort a foreign government into intervening in our election to try to embarrass a potential political opponent of his. There's overwhelming evidence of that. We couldn't wait because, I mean, some people said, well, you know, let the election take care of it. He's trying to cheat in that election. So it is essential that we bring this impeachment to stop the president from trying to rig, not from trying, he tried, from rigging the next election.
There was a lot of talk about why not wait. We couldn't wait. This is too damned important. I mean, except for, you know, that I had a timeshare that I had to use in December, the last 2 weeks of December. So we had to get out of town for that. And then we had, you know, if we figured we waited 2 weeks already, why not wait 2 weeks more? And now here we are. Now we're ready to not wait. Now we're ready to not wait. And did you notice at the beginning when he's sitting there and he's going, the president did this illegally. He withheld this money and he did it illegally. The law, A, was that the money had to be disbursed by September 30th and it was disbursed on September 11th. So there was no violation of the law. And secondly, if there was this ironclad case that Donald Trump did violate the law, why didn't you bring that that charge to impeachment, Jerry? It's overwhelming. It's you don't think you could have gotten a majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives to impeach the president on that one? So instead, they created two ridiculous charges that no human being has ever been accused of in their life. Abuse of power, never been charged of. Abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. You said you've got him right there violating the law and withholding this money, which is a violation of the law, a clear violation of the law. Then you could have nailed him on that one. You could have impeached him on that one. Yet they didn't. They didn't impeach him of any crimes whatsoever because they didn't have any proof of any crimes. They created new alleged crimes. And when you create a crime that nobody's ever been charged with before, you get to set what constitutes the burden of proof. That's why they did it. That's why they did it. The obstruction of Congress. What the hell is obstruction of Congress? Well, it's obstructing Congress. Well, administrations all the time have power struggles with Congress. That's perfectly normal. Claiming executive privilege is hardly obstruction. Oh, yeah, but this is different. All right, well, then what constitutes proof? What we say does. It's never been charged before, so what constitutes proof is whatever we say it is. Abuse of power, that's a tactic. How do you abuse your power as a crime? Well, you do it because we said you did it, and that's all there is to it. Done and done, moving on. These people are insane. These people are nuts. Keep in mind that if Democrats had such a strong case, they wouldn't have to lie about it. That's pretty simple. If they had all these overwhelming facts on their side, they wouldn't have to lie about it. The evidence would be overwhelming. Stevie Wonder would be able to see it from the sky. The American public would be able to see it and understand it. Yet they passed on all the charges that they were talking about bringing against Trump that the American people understood, precisely because the American people understood them. Bribery. Well, the president's guilty of bribery. And you look at what the evidence they have is, and they say this in no way supports a charge of bribery. So they scrapped that. Extortion. People know what extortion is. So they looked at the evidence and they said, well, the evidence no way supports this either. We've got to get more creative than that. If we create the unit of measure, then we can determine what is and isn't guilt. And again, if they had a strong case, they wouldn't have to lie about it. Case in point, after the press conference, the whole little gaggle conga lined down to the floor of the House of Representatives to officially vote on the package that authorized the spending and authorized the appointment of these impeachment managers. And Nancy Pelosi took to the floor. She had a nice little poster next to her of the flag. Oh, and she had a line from the Pledge of Allegiance, and underneath it said to the Republic for which it stands, and she's so patriotic the way that she cherry picked a line from the Pledge of Allegiance. That's your patriotism. Okay, Nancy, patriotism is more than a slogan. It's more than wearing a lapel pin, Nan. But hey, you do you. It works on Democrats. That's it. You have an American flag. Well, you love this country as much as George Washington did. Doesn't matter that it's flying upside down beneath the communists' hammer and sickle. You still love this country because you have a flag. It's that kind of mentality. And again, Nancy Pelosi lies on the floor of the House of Representatives. Listen to her. She's going to be talking about, it's a very short clip. It's her talking about the transcript. She changes one very important word where she says the word me, the transcript says the word us. It changes the meaning dramatically, and it's exactly what Adam Schiffhead did in the hearing where he was doing a dramatic interpretation. It's a scam. It's a lie. It's a fraud. It's progressive. Here's Nancy Pelosi.
Yes, and said he could say to the president, he could make, do me a favor. Do me a favor. Do you paint houses too? What is this? Do me a favor.
The only problem for Nancy Pelosi is the president of the United States did not say at any point during that conversation, do me a favor. He said, do us a favor, though, because our country's been through a lot, referring to the foreign involvement and interference and whatever in the 2016 election. That's what the president went on to discuss with President Zelensky of Ukraine. If you could look into that and any Ukrainian involvement, because there had been a lot of media reports about how Ukraine, too, was interfering to help Hillary Clinton. And as far as Donald Trump knew at the time, foreign governments interfering in our election was a crime. Not anymore. Not if it helps Democrats. That's okay. They were trying to help Hillary Clinton. So that was what the president said. And that is not what Nancy Pelosi said. Now, again, if you have a strong case, if you have this wonderful ironclad case, why do you have to lie about it, Nancy? Why do you have to give a false impression? You shouldn't need to lie about it to persuade the American people if you have this ironclad evidence that the Democrats say they have. You heard Jerry Nadler, we've got the perfect thing, we've got the whole thing, ho, 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 ho. And she lied. She lied. There's no doubt about it. She lied. She changed it from do us a favor, meaning the country, because our country's been through a lot, to do me a favor. And then it was dig into Joe Biden, which didn't come again until 540 words later, after Trump had spoken for a long time and Zelensky had spoken for a long time. Then casually, the name Joe Biden and Hunter Biden come up and their little shady dealings in Ukraine. There was no ask to look into Joe Biden. There was no ask anything related to Joe Biden. So if they have such a strong case, why do they need to lie about it? Well, we know why. They have a conviction in their minds. They have an agenda in their minds. The only thing lacking in their 2020 election scheme and strategy is a charge, a crime, anything done wrong by the President of the United States that would warrant impeachment. So they saw an opportunity. And it's just, you have to fudge the numbers. You have to maybe blur the edges a little bit. No big deal. We can blur the edges a little bit. We can change the word us to me, and we can go from there. All right? We couple that with a whistleblower, and Adam Schiff is very well connected to the so-called whistleblower, helped coordinate the complaint, it sure seems, but he doesn't want to talk about it. He's one of the impeachment managers. It'd be very interesting if the Senate decides to call him as a witness. He's terrified, I suspect, of that. But they just kind of blur the edges, blur the lines, change a couple of things around, and then they say, voila. Proof. A horrible, horrible crime was committed here. It's like running around saying, there's been a murder. This is awful, and we need to charge that guy over there with murder. And you say, all right, well, where's the body? Well, look, you're getting bogged down in details that are wildly unimportant here. Okay, well, who's the victim? Look, you're really drilling. You're missing the big picture here. That person over there is a murderer. Okay, but where's some blood, Italy? Is there anything? Some poison in a cup? Can you show me anything that somebody might have been... Look, you're obviously not interested in the truth. So we're just going to plow ahead anyway, get the indictment, and go and try and railroad this person into prison. What's telling, though, is later on in her little spiel on the floor of the House of Representatives, Nancy again went back to her Putin delusion. She didn't call him Vladimir Putin this time, but it shows again that she is trying to conflate the bogus reports of Russian collusion, which their own guy, Robert Mueller, just blew to absolute hell, and what President Trump is being impeached over. Listen to her again on the floor of the House of Representatives, and I remind you what I've said just a few minutes ago. If you have such a wonderful case, why do you have to lie about it? Why can't you just make your case? Instead, she's throwing everything in there. And implying, again, and the left likes to say, well, Donald Trump believes in conspiracy theories. The Russia hoax is a wild conspiracy theory that's been disproven by their own guy, their own golden god. Robert Mueller was going to come in and sweep Donald Trump from office. And he found nothing. He exonerated the president on the idea of Russian collusion. And the Democrats are going, damn it, we spent 2 years building this thing up. Now we are looking at a situation where we've got to do something with this sort of paranoia that we've built up in people. So what do you have? She's trying to conflate the two. This is Nancy Pelosi on the floor of the House of Representatives doing just that.
It just reminds me that I think most Americans would think that voters in America should decide who our president is, not Vladimir Putin in Russia deciding who our president is. I'm very concerned that in all of this, whether it's withholding funds for the Ukrainian government to fight the Russians, whether it's undermining our commitment to NATO, whether it's, again, making decisions of what happens in Syria vis-a-vis Turkey, favoring the Russians, that all roads lead to Russia. All roads lead to Putin.
All roads lead to Russia. All roads lead to Putin. All roads, blah, 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 blah. Everything, they go back to this Russian well constantly. Why? Because even though it's been disproven with their base, with their radical anti-Trump rabid base, that sticks. That matters. That carries weight. They fear Russia. Oh, no, Vladimir Putin's a strong man. He's a communist. Vladimir Putin has a hell of a lot more in common policy-wise with Democrats than the Democrats are comfortable admitting. They have a lot more in common with the old Soviet Union than Democrats want you to understand. So they're accusing Donald Trump of being this Putin stooge. Oh, he may have gotten loans from Vladimir. Remember that when Larry O'Donnell was like, you know, Donald Trump got co-signed some loans from Donald with Vladimir Putin's friends. And then he had to go back on TV and said, yeah, I don't have any proof of that. Sorry about that. I probably shouldn't have said that. Like, yeah, you think, but that's who the Democrats are. They've got something that's stuck with their base. So they're sitting there going, well, this is how it is. We've got to, all roads lead to Putin. We got to keep tying Putin into this. Now, if Trump were a Putin stooge, would he have authorized any military aid to Ukraine? I don't think so. But what is the philosophy behind that? Donald Trump is authorizing $400 million in military aid to Ukraine, so Vladimir Putin is cool with, all right, you can give them enough to fight us, but not to win. Not to win. Just enough to fight us. No, that doesn't make any sense. Nothing about this makes any sense. The slight delay in aid that Ukraine wasn't even aware of, so therefore it wasn't like they were sitting there, keep refreshing their bank account, going, where's that money? We're sitting here, we've got all these guns, but we've got no ammunition. We've got all these tanks, but we've got no weapons. We don't have any ammunition or gas to put in these tanks. We've got nothing. We're sitting here defenseless. We need this money. That's not what was going on. So if this was some sort of master play by the puppeteer Vladimir Putin, to what end, I would ask? To what end? The president was never going to deny the aid. He was never going to go back to Congress and say, you need to stop this aid. They were always going to get this aid. He just wanted an investigation into the corruption of the 2016 election from them. That's the only ask the president made during that phone call. So what would be Russia's plan? Was Russia planning a major offensive against the dead broke waiting for U.S. checks to clear Ukrainian military? No, that isn't what happened at all. So to what end was Vladimir Putin making this play? There is no end. There is no answer. They have no clue. They don't get asked these types of questions. So it doesn't really matter. They can go out to the podium. They can go out to the floor of the House. They can go on Rachel Maddow's show. They can go anywhere they want and just make stuff up, because they know that nobody that they are ever going to get close enough to ask them a question is going to ask them any tough questions. They've gotten away with it in the court of public opinion. So they just keep plowing ahead. This is about feeding their base. They've fed them lies for the last 2.5 years. They can't suddenly starve them, and they can't retroactively tell their base that, oh, by the way, the food we gave you has no cat. It's basically the iceberg lettuce of nutrition. There's nothing in it. You've been lied to. Sorry. Because they wouldn't like that very much. They can't give up on the ghost of Russia, because that's the basket into which they've put all of their eggs. That's what's going on up on Capitol Hill. That's what's going on with this trial. You should play this for your friends so they can learn, or at least tell them, because somebody needs to say it. Speaking of Russia and the master puppeteer, Vladimir Putin's kind of got his hands full, I would think. Reuters is reporting Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev said Wednesday that his government was resigning to give Vladimir Putin room to carry out the changes he wants to make to the Constitution. They're just basically solidifying power around Vladimir Putin. We're watching them become a dictatorship. Vladimir Putin is a little bit too concerned about his own future to really kind of mess and fuss with us. But hey, whatever. At least on the day-to-day basis, I assume he's giving all of his puppets in the Trump administration a freer hand to move. He knows he can trust them now, right? That's what they'll say. The unexpected announcement, which came shortly after Putin proposed a nationwide vote on sweeping changes that would shift power from the presidency to parliament, means Russia will also get a new prime minister. Possible candidates, blah, blah, blah. Medvedev made the announcement on state TV, sitting next to Putin, who thanked Medvedev, a close ally, for his work. Putin and Medvedev would take on a new job. Putin said Medvedev would take on a new job as deputy head of Russia's Security Council, which Putin chairs. Putin asked for the outgoing government to remain at work until a new government was appointed. There is upheaval in Russia. Vladimir Putin is a strong man. This is kind of funny. This is what totalitarians do. They try to put the stamp of legitimacy on their seizures of power. It's humorous in a way, but it is every bit as much as a violent revolution. They get into power and then they slowly, like the Nazis. When Adolf Hitler was chancellor and then the Reichstag burned, and oh my God, he needs emergency powers to find out who's attacking their government. This is clearly some sort of hostile act. And so they voted him basically absolute power. Well, it was seemingly on the surface to morons legitimate. And maybe the people of Russia are morons. I don't know. But it was seemingly, it had the stamp of legitimacy because, well, the government authorized these sorts of things. Putin is asking for changes to the Constitution. He wants to put it up to a referendum, allegedly. He can control what votes go into the ballot boxes. He can control which votes come out of the ballot boxes. He can control the count as it goes. He's a lot like Democrats in this country, to be perfectly honest with you. So I think Vladimir Putin kind of has his hands full and is a little bit too busy trying to consolidate his own power to worry about directing the president of the United States to do anything. But if you're a Democrat, your leadership is telling you the exact opposite, of reality, the exact opposite of the truth, which, again, you don't have to do if you have a strong case. Speaking of having a strong case, or a case, remember Michael Avenatti? He's a name you haven't heard in a while because we're normal people and we go about our business. But Michael Avenatti has been arrested again. it's just not a good time to be Michael Avenatti. Time magazine reports California attorney Michael Avenatti has been rearrested for alleged bail violations, prosecutors in New York told a judge late Tuesday. Prosecutors said in a one-page letter to U.S. District Judge Paul G. Gardfey, whatever, who cares, that they were told by prosecutors in Los Angeles that an arrest warrant had been issued and it was expected Avenatti would be arrested soon. He was. He was being disbarred, or at least had a disciplinary hearing with the California bar, and they came in and arrested him. That's not really going to bode well, I wouldn't think, for the case that you're not an unethical shyster trying to screw over your clients. It's just bad. Your honors, or however you address the board at the bar, I'm telling you, I'm being railroaded here. This is all Donald Trump's fault. I'm sure he was trying to blame Donald Trump for this. And I didn't do nothing. And then in come the marshals to arrest you again. The Los Angeles Times. A federal judge revoked the bail of Los Angeles attorney Michael Avenatti on Wednesday and ordered him jailed as he awaits trial on three indictments, saying new allegations of fraud and money laundering show he poses a danger to the public. Now, he should have been in the state of New York. They don't have cash bail. He would have been out on the streets almost immediately. Different judge, Judge James G. Selna of the U.S. District Court in Santa Ana, agreed with prosecutors that it appeared Avenatti had broken federal and state law by hiding $1 million from one of his ex-wives and other creditors after his March arrest. He was a front runner for the Democratic nomination at one point, not that long ago. Avenatti was arrested again late Tuesday in downtown Los Angeles and jailed overnight. He was escorted out of the courtroom by a uniformed U.S. Marshal agent. In documents filed in federal court, prosecutors allege that Avenatti received the $1 million in legal fees in April as part of a client's settlement, but concealed the money from his second ex-wife, Lisa Story Avenatti, a former law partner, tax authorities, and other creditors. Michael Avenatti owes a lot of people. You would think, this is what I don't understand, and this is sort of the arrogance of money and power. If you are doing these things that Michael Avenatti has been accused of. Not the Nike extortion thing. That's new. And that was his legal tactic. It was stupid. It was dumb. It's probably illegal. But I'm talking about the embezzling from clients, the ripping off of clients, the getting settlements on behalf of clients and not giving the money to clients, that sort of stuff. If you know you're doing that, why in the hell would you then go out and put yourself out there for the public? Why would you make yourself the face of CNN and MSNBC, the face of the anti-Trump movement, take on Stormy Daniels as a client, go full bore down the line of you're never going to get me, I'm going to destroy the president of the United States? Why would you draw so much of the spotlight onto yourself, knowing full well that if just anybody in a cursory look at your life would find all of this stuff? Why would you take on a high-profile client if you planned on withholding money and stealing from them? You have a history of that and a need because you're probably living well beyond your means. Wouldn't then there be the risk of that high-profile client going, you're ripping me off? And suddenly this person that you've sort of brought to national prominence would have access to all these reporters and everything and be willing to hear them, be willing to listen to them. You just dig in your own grave. It doesn't make any damn sense whatsoever. It's the only thing I can possibly figure out that it is the arrogance and the ignorance of the of power and money. I don't know. I don't have either of them. I would love to have enough money to make these kind of mistakes, or at least contemplate these kind of mistakes, but I don't. So it, I don't understand that if I'm doing something, if I've, if I know I'm doing something wrong, and the allegations against Michael Avenatti, there is no ambiguity in them, if they're true or if they're even half true. There, you don't do the things that he's accused of doing by accident. You don't take $800,000 from a settlement for your client and not give it to your client, but spend it yourself. You don't do that unless you go, oopsie, well, that was, I meant to reach into my left pocket where I keep my $800,000, and I accidentally reached into my right pocket where I keep your $800,000, and I blew through your money. Sorry about that, old chap. Because then you could just go, well, here's your $800,000. I'll just give you mine, and we'll call it even. If you're doing this sort of thing, you're fully aware of what you're doing. He must have thought he could get away with it. Now, why would he have thought he could get away with it? Well, A, he'd been apparently getting away with it for some time, and B, he has friends in the media. Well, they were friends in the media. Now he has people who pretend they don't know who it is. You know, he shoots him a text, and Don Lemon goes, hey, new phone, who's this? Rachel Maddow likely won't have him on anytime soon. Nicole Wallace, the new darling over at MSNBC, probably won't be having him guest co-host with her anytime soon. He's unlikely to be invited back onto The View again. But he was, and never forget that he was. So along those lines, the Washington Free Beacon re-upped a montage that they put together of journalists, media types, and the voices you're about to hear are journalists from MSNBC and CNN and The View, if you can call it that, talking explicitly to or about Michael Avenatti. There's nothing snuck in here where they're talking about their childhood hero, although you'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference by how they're talking about Avenatti. They are talking explicitly about Michael Avenatti so that no one ever forgets and so that the public writ large understands that the media created Michael Avenatti, they elevated Michael Avenatti, they championed Michael Avenatti as some sort of incorruptible anti-Trump crusader hero who we should all look up to, and now they won't even mention his name. To this point, I haven't seen it. Maybe eventually somebody will, but I haven't seen any reporters on MSNBC or CNN mention the fact that Michael Avenatti has been arrested again twice and is facing even more charges. They want to pretend that what you're about to hear didn't happen, which is why I'm playing it, because it did happen. They did do it. They did invite him to their parties. They did hang out with him. They all took selfies with him. They all championed him. They all built him up, and now they want no ownership or responsibility for anything whatsoever because it reflects poorly on them. They were lying then. They knew they were lying then. They were just doing it by proxy, by allowing him to do it. Here's a little montage of the media love for Michael Avenatti.
He's Donald Trump's worst nightmare, Michael Avenatti.
Joining us once again is Michael Avenatti.
Let's bring in Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti. Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti, thank you very much.
He's out there saving the country.
Don Meacham says he may be the savior of the republic.
You are something of a folk hero now.
I owe Michael Avenatti an apology. I've been saying enough already, Michael. I've seen you everywhere. What do you have left to say? I was wrong, brother. You have a lot to say.
I am just dying to hear what you think.
These people all like you.
I'm the only person right here Donald Trump fears more than Robert Miller.
We think you guys are the tip of the spear that's going to take down Donald Trump.
Michael Avenatti's a beast.
Okay, that's true.
And
he's a beast.
He's a beast.
I hand it to her, and I hand it to Michael Avenatti.
But he has a great, bigger calling here, that being a lawyer is minimal compared to what he's doing.
No one has talked tougher directly to Donald Trump on TV than Michael Avenatti, and Donald Trump is afraid to mention his name.
That's fascinating. Donald Trump is terrified of Michael Avenatti.
He gives Trump a run for his money more than anybody else, Michael Avenatti.
An existential threat to the Trump presidency.
The Democrats could learn something from you. You are messing with Trump a lot more than they are.
He has no doubt created sheer panic in Donald Trump's very fragile mind.
Michael Avenatti is laying down the law as guest co-host. And is he really thinking about running for president?
One reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
You look at the field of Democrats right now, and Avenatti's the one who stands out.
If they decide they value a fighter most,
yes,
people would be foolish to underestimate Michael Avenatti.
I have always said that they need a fighter.
Look, I mean, we're going to continue to use the media. I think we've used it with great success.
That last voice there was the man himself, Michael Avenatti. We're going to continue to use the media. I think we've used it with great success. Yes. You have used it to great success. And then now they're going to... Where are all your friends now, Mike? Where are all your... Where's the human potato, Brian Stelter? Why isn't he trying to get you on his show this Sunday? What's going on? Does he return your calls anymore? Are you still texting with Fredo Cuomo? You and Larry O'Donnell still having drinks at the club? Or is that over with? Yep. There are useful idiots. And then there are just idiots. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. I guess I probably went too long on everything, but that's what happens when I start my mouth. I shudder to think of the carbon footprint of my own mouth. We'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget, if you've got questions for Brandon Straka, email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, by 3 p.m. today. So if you're listening to this after 3 p.m., there's not much I can do for you. And I will do my damnedest to get an answer for you. The walk away guy should be on the show. Of course, now everything will go wrong and it won't happen. But I'm taking a risk. I'm taking an awful risk, Vader. This had better work. Taking a risk, but that should be on the show tomorrow. Plus, whatever else happens between then and now. We're almost to Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Almost to Friday. Oh, and here comes Quinn crawling in. Quinn, before we say goodbye, you want to say hello to everybody?
Everybody's going to get downstairs, go wake mommy.
Yep. Are you ready to go to sleep?
No, I'm waking up.
Yes, we're all waking up to what the Democrats are shoveling. Well done. Good segue there, Quinn. If you want to support the show, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Otherwise, be back here tomorrow. Have a Thursday. Have a happy Thursday, I guess. And I'm tired. I'll see you tomorrow.
Voters in America should decide who our president is, not Vladimir Putin.